This is Broadway to Brazil, the remarkable story of Corinthian Casuals, the English non-league club who took football to the world.
For 3 years in the early 80s, Billy Smith transformed the fortunes of Corinthian Casuals. When he took over as manager, the team had finished bottom of the league for three straight seasons. By the end of his time at the club, they had reached the first round proper of the FA Cup for only the second time in their history, with future stars like Alan Pardew, Andy Gray and Tony Finnegan among their ranks. This is the story of how they did it. This is the story of Billy's heroes.
He was very persuasive in making me come to Corinthian Casuals. I didn't really know too much about the history of Corinthian at that time. All I knew was they were building a good side.
And disciplined, you know, just in his cockney way, like, that ain't good enough for me, you know, you're f***ing about, you c***s, like, you could do better than that.
And that worked for you?
Yeah, 100%, yeah.
After being beaten 4-0 and still working at Displaycraft, could I have gone to bed that night thinking, yeah, maybe in 7 years' time I'll be in a cup final?
Hello, listener, and welcome to Series 2, Episode 2 of Broadway to Brazil, the only podcast taking a close look at the Corinthian Casuals. I am, of course, joined by my co-host Dominic Bliss.
Hello.
And I'm delighted to report that we're also joined by a voice that some listeners may recall from the first series. He's a sports writer and reporter of many, many years' experience, Mr. Tony Banks. How are you, mate?
I'm fine. How are you?
Very good, mate. Very good. Dom, why don't you tell the listeners what they're going to be hearing about today? Part of Casuals history that's perhaps a little less commonly talked about.
Yeah, I don't think everyone associates Corinthian Casuals in the early 80s as being a high point or a golden era in the club's history. Certainly we'd associate the 1880s more likely with the Corinthians. But there was a period for 3 years where a new manager came in, Billy Smith, and he built a team that took Casuals from being abject. They'd finished bottom 10 seasons out of the last 11 when he took over in a division you couldn't get relegated from. And he changed that completely. He started with a clean slate. He kept just one player from the previous side. And he built a fresh squad based around a core of players that worked on the Covent Garden market with him. So they started to compete at the top end of the table. And he brought in a few young players who had aspirations of playing professionally. And we had a cup run as a result of that. So we're going to hear from three of those players today. Mm-hmm. Tony Finnegan, who later played for Crystal Palace, Blackburn and Fulham. Andy Gray, who also starred for Palace as well as Aston Villa and Tottenham, and won an England cap under Graham Taylor.
We should clarify, that's not the Scottish Aston Villa Andy Gray, right?
Yeah, yeah. The English Andy Gray, who was probably better known for playing for Palace, really, I would say.
Yeah.
And Alan Pardew, who we all know, he played alongside Gray for Crystal Palace in the 1990 FA Cup final.
Yep.
Before managing several Premier League football clubs.
Tony, you were around and covering non-league football in the era that we're talking about. What are your kind of memories of the non-league scene back then? And do the names that Dom's talking about here have any resonance for you?
They do, but I always remember Casuals really struggling. Always at the bottom of the Isthmian League. I remember when I first started covering football, they played on the pitch at the back of Kingstonian's Richmond Road ground. And they were always at the bottom of the second division of the Isthmian League, I seem to remember. And miles adrift a lot of the time at the bottom.
Well, what was it you said, Dom? 10 out of 11 seasons?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that really rings a bell. I mean, Billy Smith was a very, very well-known non-league manager, loads of experience. Pretty sure he also managed Kingstonian and Tooting and was very old school, I seem to remember. His players would have been very fit, very well organised. Great non-league manager, very well known as well.
Well, that came across in the interviews, actually, the old school nature of his management. We're going to hear a few colourful impressions as well as stories from some of the players. What's interesting to me is that Finnegan, Gray and Pardew, who, you know, a lot of people will remember as top flight footballers, in 1983, they were a box packer, a stencil cutter and a glazier.
I think the listener at home should play the game of can they guess which one is which?
Yeah, they're all going to tell us at different points in this episode. So should we crack on and hear what they had to say?
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to this. Let's go.
I came to Casuals because I was playing on a Tuesday night at King's Cross for the TV Times. And a lot of the guys used to play for the Corinthian Vets. So I would play there on a Tuesday, and then on a Sunday I'd play for the Corinthian Casual Vets.
Who's this we're listening to here, Dom?
That's Andy Gray. And later in his career, he'd score against Liverpool in an FA Cup semi-final and earn an England cap against Poland in a qualifier for Euro 92. But back in 1982, he dropped out of the game altogether. I mean, he was playing for the TV Times.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by this TV Times football enterprise.
Well, Martin Tyler was among the Corinthian Casuals veterans that was playing for the TV Times, and that's how he encouraged him to come down to train at Colliers Wood with Corinthian Casuals. And, you know, it'd been a tough period for Gray. He was given a fresh start, essentially, by Billy Smith and his assistant, Ron King, because he was let go by Crystal Palace's youth setup, and he was finding it tough to regain a foothold in the game.
Like, basically, they said, what are you doing here? You know, you should be playing for our first team. And then I got introduced to Bill. He came and watched me, Billy Smith. He invited me to train at Colliers Wood, not far from here. That's where we used to train, behind the petrol station. So, yeah, that was how I was basically introduced to Corinthian Casuals. I was at Palace from 11 to I was 16, got released. I signed apprenticeship at Brentford, but only lasted like 4 months because I kept coming late because I was from Brixton going all the way down to Brentford. So anyway, the manager, Freddie Callan and Chopper Harris, gave me the boot. So I was like 16 and a half. Then I kind of went out of football for about a year. And then that's when I started playing with my mates at King's Cross again.
Well, it's normal for amateur footballers at Corinthian Casuals to have a job. And at the time, you were a stencil cutter there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It wasn't the best. It all came because obviously I was doing well at Corinthian, so everyone like went the extra yard for me. Do you know what I mean? I was still young. They saw potential. So, you know, they just like helped me along. And obviously the other side of it was like the mental side, you know, putting you in the right frame of mind and like not gallivanting and just concentrating on like your trade.
Yeah, as a 19-year-old, that's where your career can go either way, I suppose.
Well, yeah, well, I was out of it, wasn't I? So it wasn't like I gave up football for, I don't know, I didn't even bother. I don't even know what I'd done for that year. Do you know what I mean? I weren't playing football.
What were your hopes and aspirations, even your dreams for top flight football? Were they still there even, or had you literally given it all up at that point?
Do you know what? If I'm being honest with you, I didn't like sit at home and say I wanted to be a professional footballer. But I knew I was good at it. That's the only thing I was good at in life, was playing football. But I didn't put any pressure on me and say, I didn't. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed playing with the guys that I was playing with. And as I said, with that enjoyment, it just led on to bigger and bigger and bigger things.
Doesn't come across as one of the bigger egos in football, does he?
No, I was really kind of taken by him. He seemed such a humble guy. And the fact that he was so honest about the problems he'd had as a teenage footballer, and even his motivation had clearly taken a bit of a battering, I think. But he knew he was good and he was going to get back in the game. And you could tell that he just needed a chance, a second chance. It was almost like Corinthian Casuals gave him a foothold or a springboard to get back into the game, which I suppose was probably quite a regular thing at that time, wasn't it, Tony, in non-league?
It was, and the interesting thing that about the club that he went to, Palace, was if you look at that 1990 Cup final side, a lot of the players were like that. Obviously, Pardew we know about, and Finnegan we knew about, but there were several others who came through non-league football. And if you talk to Coppell, Steve Coppell, who was the manager of that team, and Alan Smith, they will tell you that the hunger in that team was because most of them had been kicked out of football before, and that was their second chance, really, at Palace. They weren't a brilliant team, but the Ian Wright, a perfect example.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, never made it, was playing for Greenwich Borough.
Yeah, and actually the next player we're going to hear from, Alan Pardew, he was going along nicely as a non-league midfielder in his early 20s. He played for Epsom and Ewell and Whiteleaf. But in 1982, he took the opportunity to join Smith at Casuals.
Yeah, I joined because I was sort of feeling I wanted to move on in the football world a little bit. And I'd gone to Epsom and Ewell, I think, and I didn't enjoy it. I went back to Whiteleaf or whatever. But I felt that I could do better, a better club. Billy Smith, I don't know how he became aware of me, but he was very persuasive in making me come to Corinthian Casuals. I didn't really know too much about the history of Corinthian at that time. All I knew was they were building a good side. That's all I knew.
And you were a glazier at this time, right? So how did you balance the day job and the football?
Well, like all non-league players, I mean, some non-league players these days are full-time, I think. But back then, no one was full-time, really. So you worked your normal hours. I used to work hard because it was a physical job from about 8 o'clock to about half past 3, 4 o'clock, which would be hard graft. When I look back on it, that was a hell of a stint, really, because we was on piecework. Probably doesn't mean much to you these days, but piecework was you earned as much as you put in. So how many windows you put in, that was how much money you earned that particular day. So you had to really graft to earn your money. And then, you know, drive from work, usually straight to training, and obviously to evening games as well. Finish evening games and then get up the next morning and work. And that was just a normal routine. It didn't really bother me. It was just normal. I didn't really think about it too much.
Alan Pardew's obviously a voice familiar to a lot of our listeners and to ourselves, and also someone that you, Tony, would have interviewed a lot as a manager. Do you remember him much as a non-league player?
I never saw him play, but I knew all about his history. I think he went to Yeovil after Corinthian Casuals. Am I right in thinking that? He went to Yeovil, which was obviously a step up non-league-wise. They were a big non-league club, still are. And then Coppell picked him up, as I say, like he did with a lot of that Palace side. And Pardew had they used to call him the Silver, I think they called him the Silver Fox at Palace, because he always had blonde hair, didn't he?
Yeah.
And he was a specialist at arriving in the penalty area and knocking the ball in. He wasn't a brilliantly skillful player. He'd admit that himself, I think. But what he was very good at, he worked really hard and he was quite a good passer of the ball. And he was great at arriving in the penalty area and banging the ball in the net.
Sounds like he worked pretty hard as a glazier too.
And obviously Palace were once known as
the glaziers.
So it's the perfect match, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and so the third player we're going to hear from, Tony Finnegan, he was an England youth international and one of South London's most promising players. Like, he was in the local paper, talked about as a wonder kid. And then the cruel realities of professional football, you know, a series of injuries, released by clubs, and he ended up looking for a platform to relaunch his career, a bit like Gray.
From a personal point of view, it was a tough time because I did my scholarship at Palace, got released by Venables, 18, went to Fulham and got a two-year contract, but got a year's contract under Malcolm McDonald's tutelage. We had a great youth team there with some good players, Peter Scott, Paul Parker, Peter Knott. We had some Dean Coney, some real good players. And I was really happy, you know. So I just was so happy, just enjoying my football, you know. And then got called up by Johnny Cartwright to England, and that was it. I was just happy days. And then we went to the World Cup in Australia, and I remember Malcolm McDonald. So in the mornings, you'd come, you'd have a big area where you'd have your coffees and your teas, and then he said, oh, Tony Finnegan, stand up in front of everybody. He goes, oh, just everybody, I want to give a round of applause to Tony. Gale was like, well done. This guy's going to England World Cup. Brilliant, great achievement. By the way, you're getting released when you get back. That's exactly what he said to me.
No way.
I swear, God's my witness. I'm like, whatever, that's rubbish. Went away for the tournament, came back. It was true. I was getting released. So I knew I was getting released 6 months before the fucking season was going to finish. Mm. And we had the old combination league then, which was the reserve league. And I remember the second to last game of season, I went up for a ball and tore my left hamstring. And it changed my life. I was out for a year. I didn't have any treatment. I got released. It's almost like, yeah, you've got released. Well done, Tony. We went down Fulham Palace Road to a pub and you just said goodbye to everybody that you've basically friends with for the last 2 years, and then bang, you're out the game. And I fucking struggled with it, man, if I'm honest. The hamstring healed itself and it altered my running action for the rest of my career. Yeah. I actually got around it in the end. But at the time, I remember Geordie Armstrong, who played for Arsenal.
Yeah.
He loved me and he said, come up to Middlesbrough. Peter Beargrey, Tony Mowbray, it was that team. But my hamstring had gone. It had gone. Leicester City, I met Alan Smith. Arsenal's Alan Smith came from a non-league side. They signed him and we were up front together. And I just broke down, man. Kept breaking down, and I came back to London and fucking got a job packing boxes in Harrods.
Right.
In the basement, went for an interview. I said, you know, what's this job? Blah, blah. I said, what pays the most? He said, packing boxes. I said, I'd do that. And then one day I was driving the Mini down Brixton Water Lane, looked to my left, saw this black guy. I thought, I know him. And it was Andy Gray. Andy, I grew up with, he was small, really small. And when I saw him, I was like, fuck me. He had just shot up, he's bigger. And I went, Andy! And I was like, how are you, blah, blah, blah. And I stopped the car and he went, I'm playing at this club. What are you doing?
Presumably the club he's talking about is Corinthian Casuals here.
Yeah, and after talking to him, Finnegan decided to take a chance and join his old mate in the Isthmian League.
I met Andy, turned up training. It's almost like a family atmosphere and I couldn't miss a match. In the end, I loved it. I loved every single game. Every game, we'd get on the coach, family orientated, and it just gave you an appetite for playing. A band of brothers, other people that were in the same boat as me with the same beliefs, the same desire to make it, same aspirations as me, wanting to get on in football. And I was determined to get back to being a pro and determined to retire at 35, no matter what. That's what I was going to do. Nothing was going to stop me from that. And Casuals played a massive part in that. Massive, massive part. And Andy Gray sort of like a... And he'll probably be surprised to hear this, but where I saw him on that road, it helped me. Because at that time, I was always in love with football, even no matter what. But it gave you that appetite and the desire to keep on going. Keep running. You know, just having that belief.
Hi, Yarrick here. We just wanted to remind you that the Broadway to Brazil book is available now. Published by Kingston University Press, the book tells the incredible story of season one in which we follow the club during a dramatic promotion campaign. We were there for the action, got to know the players and management who were performing miracles, and also delved into the incredible history of the Corinthian Casuals. But the beauty of the book is that our journey is complemented by the wonderful pictures of Stuart Tree, the club's official photographer. It helps bring the podcast to life in a totally different way, and we think you're going to love it. It's available from most major online book retailers, with more details on our website, BroadwayToBrazil.com. Tony Finnegan, a name of any significance to you, Tony Banks?
I did see him play briefly at Crystal Palace, in and out the team. A bit like Andy Gray, because Andy Gray had to battle with Wright and Bright up front for Palace at that time. And Finnegan had to battle against Pardew and other players like that who were more regular. So he was a bit in and out the side.
All three of these players were looking for new motivation when it came to Casuals. They found it with Billy Smith. And we're going to hear from them all in a row now about how that worked.
Well, Billy was at the market, the vegetable market up at Covent Garden. So he had a few characters around the team who were from the market as well. And a few of the players, Bobby Army, I seem to remember, was working at the market at that time. And it was a real eclectic mix of sort of rough and ready types, lots of banter in terms of, you know, being market traders. You had to hold your own. So it stood me in good stead for later on in my career to put up with various jibes that were flying about the dressing room. But we had a good side, strong team, and obviously some players who went on to achieve some great success, actually.
Remember, we didn't get paid. We just went because it was just a great bunch of lads, good fucking team. And everybody were budding footballers.
And it's funny because, like, when I got into the first team, I done really well. And I think I played half a season. I don't know how many goals I scored, but I scored quite a few goals. I was playing up front then. Me and Bobby, Bernie Mirren, that's it, Bernie. It's me and Bernie. Bernie used to score loads of goals. Basically, it was like me and him up front.
Bernie Mirren was prolific. In total, he scored 93 goals in 154 games for Casuals, including six in an FA Vars game against Chertsey in 1983. And Alan Pardew still remembers him well.
Bald Bernie. Yeah, he was bald as a coot. Not bald as a coot, but he was bald. And he was a great striker. He was like a Vardy, you know, running behind, pace. Usually take no more than two touches to finish. And scored a lot of goals. He was a good outlet for us.
Bald Bernie Mirren. Any recollections of him, Tony?
I know the name. I don't think I ever saw him play, to be honest with you.
And you can't confirm to what level he was or wasn't bald as a coot.
No, sadly. I can't.
Well, you've got a poacher up top. You know how important that is in non-league, Tony. Just tell us a bit about having a Vardy-like striker playing for you in the Isthmian League in those days?
Well, I mean, that was the key, wasn't it, to success at that level. If you had somebody who could bang in the goals, then you were laughing, because it was muck and nettles football at that level. And
say muck and nettles?
Muck and nettles.
I'm not familiar with that phrase.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
And that slightly surprised, well, actually, it doesn't surprise me as much as he was there when Smith arrived, but it would have been difficult for Casuals, as ever, to keep hold of a player like that who scored a lot of goals when they were rocking around the bottom of the division, I would have thought. I don't know if he was there before Smith arrived, Merrin, was he?
Well, I get the impression that only Bobby Armitt was, and then the rest of the team all came in together.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, because he would have attracted good players, a bit like James now. He would have attracted good players.
I think there's a similarity between what James and Billy did.
Yeah.
I think, as we've seen with James, he's managed to bring in players, and Prings as assistant manager, with a good contacts book.
Mm.
And they've been able to get those players to come and play for us here, and you can build a team without the budget. You can build a team.
Mm.
Billy Smith did similar. I think Billy's way of doing it was finding a lot of the players.
Finding them through his Covent Garden flower market, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, I don't know whether he found them jobs on the market or whether he found good footballers that worked on the market.
I'd say it'd be a bit of both, actually, because he would probably find players and say, well, come and work with me. You'll earn a few more, Bob, and play with my football team. Because then the other side of that coin was he would know where they are and they'd be easily contactable. I would say a bit of both, you know.
One of the characters that just kept coming up over and over again was this rock-solid, hard man centre-half called Colin Coldspring. So let's see what I had to say about him.
Oh, my, what a fucking hard nut that was. I remember he used to say to Andy, you fucking nugget. It's all he said, you nugget. If you don't mark him, you nugget, I'm going to fucking chin you.
Yeah, I mean, Colin was my enforcer. I was very, very skinny, you know. My body didn't really come until I was sort of 22, 23. I was just sort of filling out a little bit when I got to Casuals. But anyone who kicked me or got near me, because I was a bit sort of flirty around it, you know, thought I was a bit kind of Eric Cantona type, he would go and smash them or make it very clear to them to leave me alone.
Some great tributes there to Colin Coldspring. And sadly, we've since found out that Colin's passed away after a long illness. And he was an important part of that team in 1983 and also played in the game up at Hampden Park against Queen's Park that year. So he played an important part in this club's history.
Yeah, rest in peace, Colin.
Well, it's clear how much Alan Pardew respected him as well, because when we interviewed Alan Pardew, he referenced Colin, and Colin was unwell at the time, and Alan said they're still very close friends and actually recommended that we interview him for the podcast, which we planned to do. But it was clear that him and Alan really got on very well.
I'm intrigued by Pardew labelling himself a Cantona-style player.
I think he said, I felt I was a bit of an Eric Cantona. What I like about this is that this is Corinthian Casuals, you know, and all these players came together under Smith's management and they formed this serious club environment. It's very different from this kind of 100 years of public schoolboys, all the best as an attitude. Suddenly, you know, the football for football's sake had become this unashamedly working class, unflinchingly ambitious team.
That mentality would have totally changed when Smith arrived. He wouldn't have been part of that sort of amateur kind of, oh, well, never mind, we'll go to the bar, we'll have a few beers and we play again next week. He would have totally changed that attitude and the mindset amongst the Casuals players. And, you know, those players say it, don't they? He was old school, wanted to win. The amateur days, even though it was amateur, the amateur mentality would have changed.
And that's actually another thing we've heard said about James and the current team.
Yeah, exactly. In another way, they were similar.
Yeah.
It was just what Tony Finnegan was looking for, like a potential springboard to help him get back into the Football League.
It's the closest thing to like a pro environment, do you know what I mean? Like it, because everybody was ambitious.
Yeah.
Everyone was ambitious. And obviously, now the years have gone by, you realise everyone was proud to play for that club.
And it's kind of ironic that it felt pro when it was amateur.
Yeah, I remember paying subs. You didn't get paid. You paid Billy. I can't remember what it was, you know. Like I just used to duck and dive, you know, sell clobber, sell fucking jeans, anything. Andy worked at Display Craft off of Brixton Hill. And I think one of the main guys or sponsors of Corinthians, Ron something, had a few quid. And he gave Andy a job because Andy, they knew, was destined to go off, you know, into pro. The atmosphere was brilliant. Training was really serious. Everyone was always early. And I think now probably a lot of those guys would actually end up getting pro contracts now, because in them days, a guy would probably play non-league and keep his job.
So, Dom, from speaking to all these players, what is it that made Billy Smith such a success?
Well, I asked Tony Finnegan about that, actually. What exactly was it that he liked about Billy? And it seems like he was a good man manager, a good motivator, giving people a kick up the arse, essentially.
Billy didn't do the coaching. Billy was a manager. We had a Italian or Mediterranean guy doing the coaching. It was always interesting, but it took care of itself because everyone was serious about what they were doing. But Billy was a motivator. For any player, he never said more than a sentence. Do you know what I mean? He just like, oh, I really liked him. That's my kind of management. You know, he was our taskmaster, but if you had quality, he expected you to show the quality, you know? And that's what I loved about it. He had, because he was, obviously I found that he was a good player himself in his old times when he was a younger man. And disciplined, you know, structured guy, disciplined guy. And, you know, just in his cockney way, like, that ain't good enough for me. You know, you're fucking about, you c***. Like, you could do better than that. Do you know what I mean? Like, what are you fucking doing? You're like, what kind of a fucking first touch was that, you c***? Come on. And then, like...
And that worked for you?
Yeah, 100%, yeah.
I mean, I don't think they put that in the UEFA coaching manuals, but seemed to work for him, right?
Yeah, it seems to have done. I mean, this is a team that, with that manager and those players in place, they actually had a proper FA Cup run. They reached the first round in 1983, this is. So there was a little run. I'll go through the results. They beat Camberley Town 2-0, saw Southall 3-2. Andy Gray scored two in that game. And then Bognor Regis were beaten 3-1. Our old friend Bernie Mirren got a brace and another one for Andy Gray. And then in the fourth and final qualifying round, Merthyr Tydfil came to town.
The big boys.
Yep. And Alan Pardew scored the goal that saw us through. So we were in the first round proper for the first time since 1965. To this day, it remains the last time we reached that stage of the competition. It's a piece of history, a landmark in Casuals folklore, a moment that surely nobody involved could ever forget.
I can't remember the goal.
Huh, maybe not then.
A lot of the market boys were following us at the time. It was a tough encounter. I seem to vaguely remember they were a tough like group of, tough team and a tough group of fans down there. And it was very kind of boisterous and aggressive. Yeah, so I do remember that now you mention it. Yeah, I don't remember the goal though. It can't have been any good. I'll probably a scrappy old tapping or something because it was not. It doesn't stick in my mind.
Casuals were playing at Molesey at that time. This is before we had our own ground. And by all accounts, it did kick off a bit of that game. When the dust had settled, the clubhouse at Molesey was in a right old state. Amongst the damage, there was a broken window. So, you know, if only someone at the club knew a glazier.
I did repair the window. I don't know if that come. Do you know that? The windows got smashed and I think they smashed up a little bit of the internals, fruit machines or whatever inside. But yeah, I got the window job. We had to make do in them days.
Suppose that's a bit of a advantage to being an entirely amateur club. Plenty of other vocations knocking around.
Well, yeah, you often hear, don't you, of electricians sorting the floodlights, but it turns out to be one of the players and things like that. I think it's quite a regular thing, isn't it, Tony?
Well, you remember Sutton's famous cup run of a couple of years ago and the reserve goalkeeper who was famously spotted eating a pie in the dugout. Do you remember? I don't know if you remember that.
Wayne Shaw.
His job... If you wanted to book a five-a-side pitch, because Sutton have got an all-weather pitch, he was the guy you booked it from. He lived at the club, worked at the club. That was his job. You booked the five-a-side pitch with him.
Have you come across any particularly weird ones in terms of occupations for footballers?
One guy, and he was a male model.
That's quite a good one.
That is a good one.
But a lot of them were doing fairly... sort of the same jobs we were talking about earlier, fairly sort of anything they can earn a few bob in.
Gabby Odonike, when he played for us a couple of years ago, was leasing out luxury supercars for the weekend.
That's
to
right.
People.
Not
a bad job if you can get it.
Right, so Dom, how did this FA Cup run progress?
Well, we got to the first round and the draw was kind. It paired us with one of the best known teams probably in the hat at that stage, which was Bristol City.
That is a big one.
First round, yeah. So the media took an interest in this because you've got the historic amateur club taking on one of the best pro teams in the Football League. And it was sort of a throwback, you know. So the attention it brought down turned out to be a bit of an education for the players.
I learned more about Corinthian Casuals that sort of week than I knew before because, of course, we were just playing and I was young and, you know, it was just like a football club. Didn't realise the great history to it. That was great. But, of course... Like now, the podcast and social media, there was nothing like that then. So it was South London Press, little bit of Evening Standard, a bit of the BBC, because it was a good story for them too. So yeah, we had some good coverage actually.
Yeah, it was massive. It was massive. I mean, that's all we spoke about all leading up to it, the games prior to it.
I think they show reels of 80 years old, like when the club formed, and do you know what I mean?
The media love a good romance of the cup story, eh, Tony?
They're my favourite stories to cover. I've done loads of them over the years. You go down to the clubs and talk to the players, and it's great. It's human interest, that's what it is.
Well, we discussed it a bit in the first episode of the series, didn't we? How desperate we are for the current day casuals to maybe recapture that 83 spirit and go on a real good cup run.
Yeah.
It's great because it really picks a club up, you know, and it elevates you to another level. Certainly, if only in terms of interest. But it also picks the players up so much.
And also, something Alan Pardew just mentioned there, the change in the media landscape today. You think about if it happened in the present day, how much more exposure you could get from, you know, the internet and going viral and all that sort of stuff.
But don't forget that obviously in those days, everyone was picking up the Evening Standard.
Yeah,
everyone was watching the BBC. Mm. So those were as big as getting a viral tweet.
Sure, sure.
And also, the South London Press was a much bigger paper then than it is now. So you'd have got it, by the standards of the time, they would have had some very good coverage.
And the game, we found out, launched Alan Pardew's career. And this game, by the way, was played at Dulwich Hamlet's Champion Hill ground, the original one. I don't think they wanted to play at a smaller ground like Molesey for a big fixture in the first round. So they held it at the bigger ground in South London at Dulwich.
Well, it was massive for me personally. What I remember was we were playing at Dulwich Hamlet, great little ground, old school ground, you know, had that kind of atmosphere, football atmosphere. And it was behind the hospital, I seem to vaguely remember. And that's what launched me, ironically, onto a professional career.
How did it do that?
Well, the first game, Bristol City were very wary of us, I seem to remember. And I knew that because Jerry Gow played. Jerry Gow was marking me. He later became my manager at Yeovil, and that's how my professional career got launched, because he took me to Yeovil. I mean, to go from London to play for Yeovil, it was massive. So he marked me that game, and obviously I was tearing around like I normally did, and he was impressed. And obviously we had the second leg, which we got well beat by a professional team. It kind of stuck in his memory, and obviously I ended up at Yeovil later on.
Look, we're not going to sugarcoat it. There wasn't a fairy tale ending. After getting a 0-0 at home, a highly creditable result against a team four levels higher.
Absolutely, that's a stunning result. We should be celebrating that in of itself, shouldn't we?
Yeah, the replay was a bridge too far, though, for casuals, and Bristol City ran out 4-0 winners.
Well, Bristol City pressured the amateurs of Corinthian Casuals into submission at Ashton Gate with a four-goal bonanza. It took 7 minutes for the first. Rich's initial hit the woodwork. Riley made no mistake. Next, Act 1 of the Pritchard Act. The first of his three goals came when Kershaw found Casuals keeper Chris Chapman all thumbs and no fingers. Pritchard charges in, it's in the back of the net, 2-0 in the 20th minute. Into the second half, and Pritchard made amends for that miss in the 46th minute, when his left foot shot beat Chapman. But we won't forget Pritchard's hat-trick, an awful blunder by Casuals' defence. Bit Casual found the persistent Pritchard walking the ball into an empty net. So the final score, Bristol City 4, Corinthian Casuals 0. The man of the night, undoubtedly Welsh winger.
So not the result we wanted there in the replay. But that game gave the ambitious players a chance to shine on a bigger stage, and they were well aware of the significance of that. I think Pardew grabbed his chance with both hands, as we've heard, but Andy Gray felt his audition could have gone better.
Honestly, me personally, I don't feel that I was in the game the way I would have liked to. I know that I come off the pitch knowing that I could have done more, could have been provided more chances. And to be honest, I think that was one of the first times that I kind of put pressure on myself, because I knew I was close to go into a league team. Didn't know which one, but I knew I was very, very, very close. And then obviously having the opportunity to play against a league team. The two games didn't really go brilliant for me. Obviously, the second game, we got hammered 4-0. I was just too tired. I think we had 2,500 at Dulwich Hamlet. It was special, believe me. I know, obviously, I went on to play in a cup final and play in a Scottish cup final. But that little ground, Dulwich Hamlet, with the old wooden stadium, Yeah, it was special. Our day was the Saturday for us to actually, you know, do it, because obviously the build-up to the game was brilliant. And because, like, Corinthian Casuals is like is a brand. It's a big brand. Do you know what I mean? It's so anyone, like, lucky enough to play for Casuals, believe me, dreams can happen from the fact that you play for Corinthians, because there's so many connections down the pipeline. It's unreal.
Well, Andy Gray clearly still has fondness and affection for the Casuals, right?
Yeah, we'll forgive him calling it a brand, because I think we know what he means. It's a name that transcends the sport, is what he's saying, isn't it? You know, he's right. Three players here whose dreams did come true because they played for Casuals.
I think he's talking about, at that point, he's realised the sort of prestige of the club within that field. He doesn't mean brand, he means mark, doesn't he, sort of thing. I think that's what he's talking about.
Mm. Yeah, well, maybe we're just too, I don't know, purists. Maybe we are a brand. But not in the sense that a marketeer would mean, in the sense that a footballer or someone outside the world of football will recognise the name Corinthians.
It's the old school meaning of brand, like, I don't know, PG Tips or Bond or that. They mean that, don't they? That's what you mean, like a familiar name.
Cousin Soap.
Yeah.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Fairy Liquid.
Are you guys reading the old programmes now?
No, we are actually sponsored by all these companies. Tony's an influencer, didn't you know? They're chucking Fairy Liquid at him.
I knew he had another agenda. Right, who are we going to hear next, Dom?
Well, actually, this is going to, you know, a tougher one for Tony Finnegan, because he was still cherishing ambitions of a return to the professional ranks, and he was left out of the side altogether. So his disappointment still lingers.
But I remember going in on the Dulwich night and he didn't pick me. It was a great day out and a big game, and he picked his own mates, if you like. And I remember walking away from that, getting a 37, but I was distraught. I was really upset and angry.
Yeah.
Really, really was, because he knew I could play and everybody knew I could play, and they were like, oh, you're not playing. But I went and watched and everything.
You can just detect the disappointment in his tone that still lingers. I guess this is the upshot of a kind of tightly bonded, close-knit group like that if you don't happen to be in the inner circle.
Yeah, I think Tony Finnegan kind of got introduced to the team. He wasn't on loan, but I reckon it had that feel for him maybe at that point, when all of the market boys that had been a team together for ages played in the first round game and he didn't.
You see that with non-league managers all over the place. You see it with James. He brings players with him. They follow their manager around. He's got a little sort of hardcore of players, five or six players, and they go from club to club with the manager in non-league football. You still see it to this day.
And you know that they'll do a job for you if you're their manager.
That's why he picks them all the time, you know. And if you're not in that little group, it can be hard, no doubt.
I mean, looking back on it now, it's hard to believe that these players went from the Isthmian Division 2 to the top of the game over the next few years, really. I mean, Gray was playing in a cup final 7 years later. He's actually said, you know, that the FA Cup was of huge importance in his career, but not just because of that final, because of that run with Casuals as well.
Well, after being beaten 4-0 on the Tuesday night and still working at a display craft, could I have gone to bed that night thinking, maybe in 7 years' time I'll be in a cup final and playing against Liverpool, arguably then one of the best teams in Europe, and to beat them in a semi-final?
Yeah, I mean, with hindsight, it's incredible, isn't it, actually? That's a meteoric rise.
Yeah, but I come back to saying that playing for Corinthian Casuals, it was a brand. So it's not like I came from Slough, no disrespect to Slough, or any kind of non-league side. It's Corinthian Casuals. So if you put Corinthian Casuals' name up against anyone, even Liverpool, it's like people know Corinthian Casuals.
Well, he said that word again. Does that mean Tony's going to start talking about Head and Shoulders or something?
I mean, at the end of that season, the team missed out on promotion as well. So they were going for it on two fronts, having been, you know, as I said earlier, bottom of the league for a decade. You know, they received the news, sadly, that their hopes of establishing a permanent home in Wimbledon Park had fallen through. So without home ground confirmed, the club lost its place in the Isthmian League and they had to enter the Spartan League because the rules had changed about ground ownership. Billy Smith and his players were ambitious and they realised they could no longer sort of achieve what they wanted with Corinthian Casuals. So in the summer of 84, Smith moved to Dulwich Hamlet and the end of an era, really, was nigh.
Yeah, I think we just missed out, didn't we? Either the playoffs or... I don't know if it was playoffs. No, it weren't playoffs then. I think we just missed out.
Just fell short.
Yeah, we fell short near the end. And then that's when Bill had a disagreement with the club. Basically, we all, like, followed him to Dulwich.
You know, at that time, Billy Smith was a very powerful and a very good manager at non-league level. You know, I've come up against managers in the pro game, not as good as Billy. Of course, when he left to go to Dulwich and the whole, you know, the league situation and everything else, that the best part of that team went across to Dulwich. And actually, my memory gets mixed up between Dulwich and Casuals because it was the same group of players, same manager, different team.
It's interesting, Dom, because in Series 1, we covered that move to Tolworth in 1988, what, a few years after when these guys are talking about. And I don't think perhaps we realise quite the significance in terms of having an effect on being able to retain players.
Yeah, to be able to play in the league pyramid, because the Spartan League was a side, I think it was a separate league.
Mm.
And so it was almost like your ambitions were curtailed, if you went into that, of getting up the non-league ladder. And that's why Smith and all these players left. But I think, you know, it's interesting to point out that Pardew didn't forget Billy Smith when he moved into management himself, as we'll hear here.
My first managerial job was Reading. I'm not sure if Billy scouted for me there or he scouted for me at West Ham, but I kept Billy to look out for players at the non-league level for me. So me and Billy kept that connection. I kept all my connections in non-league because it was very important to me. And the grounding I got in non-league was very, very important for when I come up against pros who thought they were celebrities before they'd done anything on the pitch. I could put them in their place, make it very clear to them that there were plenty of players who haven't earned their right to play at football level, and they hadn't. They needed to pay their dues, which obviously most non-league players have to do.
One theme that seems to come up with all these players, Dom, is how their non-league experiences seem to really put them in good stead professionally.
Yeah, one thing we've learned along the way is that you make a lot of lifelong friendships through representing this club. You don't stop being a Corinthian when you leave the club, it stays with you. Pardew might have gone on to sort of big things in the professional game, but there are plenty of people that still remind him that he started at Corinthian Casuals.
That sort of stood with me, that Corinthian Casuals, and a lot of BBC and journalists always bring it up about the Corinthian Casuals, because it was a good story, et cetera, et cetera. Of course, Martin Tyler, who you've probably had on your podcast, was a Corinthian casual. When I used to work for Sky, or he used to interview me when I was Premier League manager, we would often say, the old Corinthian is here, any chance of a cup of tea? And we'd have a cup of tea before the game. And he would wax lyrical about his striking skills. Obviously, I can't remember them. The two old Corinthians in dressing rooms at Old Trafford and Newcastle or whatever. We obviously had a little chat about it all the time. Oh, how they do it? Oh, yeah. It's always been a close association with myself, and I've always loved it. It's a great memory for me. And as I say, if I hadn't played against Jerry Gow at Bristol City, then I wouldn't have had the massive jump to Yeovil, which in turn got me to jump to Palace. That wouldn't have happened. I'm pretty convinced of it. I owe Casuals a great debt, and you know, I always look out for them.
Do you think, Tony, there is a difference when you get to the professional levels between those who have played in that lower non-league environment and those who have just come up through the youth ranks of a professional club?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, there's a difference in attitude, for a start, and there's a toughness as well about players. It's surprising how many there are, because you look at players as good as Gray, Finnegan, Pardew, Ian Wright.
Les Ferdinand,
perfect example, played for Southall, played for Hayes, and yet they slipped through the net. I don't know how that happens. You know, like Chelsea, for instance, the scouting network that they have in this area, and yet these players, sometimes they're picked up and let go because they're too small, they don't develop physically, but sometimes they're not picked up at all. And it is a wonder how it happens, but it happens, and it still happens to this day. And these players do have a hunger, which was why, as I was saying earlier, in that Crystal Palace team, you talk to Steve Coppell or Alan Smith, the assistant manager at the time, an ex-Tooting Dulwich manager. The hunger in that team was what got them to that cup final, and particularly, if you remember that semi-final, that amazing semi-final against a vastly better Liverpool team, but the hunger won it.
Yeah, and actually that's what they've all talked about, isn't it? You know, it's like that sliding doors period in their career where they could have ended up being non-league players forever. You know, Tony Finnegan, you know, he returned to the professional game And he came to Casuals, as we found out, by chance because of Andy Gray. And he literally just wanted to fall in love with the game again. And that's what he got.
For me, Casuals did all those things. It made me feel like a professional footballer. It made me want to drive and be the best I could be. It made me want to, like I said, I got up, that gate opened, I did that run in that park, 6 o'clock, twice, took 7 minutes, I ran for 14 minutes, I was back on by half six, showered, changed, packing fucking boxes, and getting back to Casuals Tuesday night, gun train, couldn't wait. And we, that changing room wanted to beat people, we wanted to wear the best. You know, I'll always, the atmosphere is unbelievable, you know, even now I can see it, man, just, oh, me. And then afterwards, in the bar afterwards, it's the first time I'd seen a black geezer hold a pint of beer, because obviously I didn't, when I went, Andy, what's that? He went, lager top. I went, what is that? I was just mad, it's weird, and just opened me up to a lot of things, man, some really, really wonderful people. And Casuals as part of that process, that made me go on to keep believing and become a professional footballer. Once again, and that's what he did. So it'll always be, when you reached out to me, it's a fucking pleasure to be able to talk about that time of my life and what that place did for me.
It was an effing pleasure to talk to you, Dom.
He's great though, isn't he?
It's really heartwarming to hear. I think you can maybe fall into the trap of thinking that if a non-league player then hits the big time, he sort of forgets about what got him there, but clearly with these guys that's not the case at all.
Yeah, and I hope people aren't, like, there's no one listening that's offended by Tony's language, because there's so much heart and soul in what he's saying. He loves it, he loves the club, he loves football, and you can just feel it in everything he said.
How about the third and final of our three voices?
Well, we've talked about it a bit, but Andy Gray rose to the very top of the game. You know, he's the last Corinthian Casuals player to go on and represent England, and he remains incredibly fond of this club.
Do you know what? It means the world to me, and, like, I suppose the people that were back there, I don't know if half of them are alive now. You guys now are younger. You've got, like, the bug for the club and the history. I always look out for Corinthians. I follow you guys on Twitter as well. I don't know if you guys follow me back, but I do follow.
Oh, we do, yeah.
It means the world to me, this club. I mean, yeah, I went on to bigger and better things, but without this club, none of it would have happened, believe me.
So there we go, Billy's Heroes, the story of the 83 Cup run. What a blinding trio of interviewees you landed there, Dom.
Yeah, just three really nice open chats about football, about Corinthian Casuals, and about putting it all on the line to try and make it in the game by coming through the non-league, and also about the romance of the FA Cup.
Exactly, and as mentioned, still desperate for that present-day cup run. Tony, was that a nice trip down memory lane for you?
Absolute pleasure, yeah, I loved it. I mean, it's brought back a lot of memories, because I love the FA Cup, for a start. I love non-league football, but I love the FA Cup. And one of my favourite times of the season is the FA Cup first round. I absolutely love it. Covered loads of games at that level. It, probably my favourite moment of the football season is covering games like that.
And you know what? There's a lot of Premier League or elite level fans, shall we say, who perhaps are a little cynical about the quote-unquote romance of the cup and the coverage it gets. But you have to remember that those stories are about stories like the Casuals, the stories we've been hearing today.
Yeah, absolutely. To be honest, I've got no time for people who think that. I mean, I know I should probably be more open-minded, but the people who say that I don't like the romance of the FA Cup, it's nonsense, it's lost its magic. I'm with Tony. The first round of the FA Cup's one of the top weekends in football.
If you don't like the FA Cup, you don't really like football.
Exactly.
There we go. We like to end an episode on a big statement, don't we? Right, that was episode 2, Billy's Heroes. I hope you've enjoyed that tale. Another very different tale from Corinthians history coming up in episode 3, the remarkable story of Andrew Watson, not just the first black Corinthian, but also the first black international. So a really interesting historical look there. Until next week, it's goodbye from us.
Next time on Broadway to Brazil.
Whilst there may have been some distinction based on his colour, it did not stop him from being able to operate at the very heights of Victorian society. He was connected to some of the most powerful people in this country, including the Prime Minister.
For someone who had such a sparkling career in football and international football, to be completely lost to footballing history is unbelievable.
social media companies, that they can mute racism or block people that use racism or whatever. But does that really get rid of the issue?
Broadway to Brazil is produced and presented by Yarick Zaba and Dominic Bliss, with editing by Yarick Zaba. Brent Davies is our audio engineer, and our title music is by John Forrest. Matt Alabuster did our artwork, and Chris Kelly manages the website, with additional thanks to Robin Hutchinson and the Community Brain and everyone at Corinthian Casuals Football Club. Broadway to Brazil is part of the Highway 61 network.
Follow Broadway to Brazil on Twitter at Broadway to Brazil with the number 2 in the middle. And remember, the Broadway to Brazil book is available now, telling the story of Series 1 with fabulous photos from Stuart Tree. You can buy the Broadway to Brazil book from any number of online retailers. Head to broadwaytobrazil.com for more info.